Good morning. Once again, welcome to Catholic Radio, the voice of Catholic tradition on Long Island, sponsored each week at this time through the courtesy of Alan E. Fricke Memorials, Incorporated of Ronkonkoma and Medford, providing monument service to all cemeteries with expert craftsmanship since 1946. Alan Fricke's telephone number is 696-0721. This morning, host Joe Bagnoli interviews Brother Pio Francis. Brother Pio is Minister Prefect of the Third Order Secular of St. Francis in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. He will explain the origin of the secular order by St. Francis and highlight some of the rules of the order in terms of tradition and contrast them with the secular Franciscan order in the Novus Ordo Church. Most importantly, Brother Pio will explain how St. Francis provides for us in this secular material world an instrument for sanctity, and how the traditional Latin Mass provides a wellspring of graces upon which this sanctity will grow.
Good morning, Mr. Portamani.
Good morning, Mr. Brignoli.
Welcome to the Voice of Catholic Tradition.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you this morning. Hopefully today, we will introduce and explain the origin and essence of the Third Order Secular of St. Francis. An order not commonly known or fully understood. But first, for our listening audience, I'd like to clarify a few points. Your secular name is Dario Prodomani, and your Franciscan name is Brother Pio Francis.
That's
Could you
correct.
Explain and clarify that for us, please?
Yes. Well, Dario Prodomani is my secular name. When the Franciscan enters into the order, he takes, although a layman, he takes a Franciscan name, and everyone who enters into the novitiate, which is a year long, who enters the order will take a Franciscan name, and thus they have the grace of a special protection of the saint's name that they take, the same as any religious would when they go into a religious order. And that's the origin of Brother Pio Francis, which is the name I chose upon being clothed in the holy habit of the Third Order, Secular St. Francis.
I see. And you are Minister Prefect of a fraternity of about 16 members in Toronto, Canada, correct?
That's right. Yes, in Toronto we have 16 altogether. We have a few postulants and a novice. So it's growing. It's doing really good. Thanks be to God.
That's very good to hear. Could you explain how this fraternity developed?
Sure. Well, around the time of the general chapter of the Society of St. Pius X, right before Bishop Bernard Fillet was going to be elected the Superior General once again, Reverend Father Mary of the Society of St. Pius X was going over there to be involved in the elections. Before he left, we had spoken briefly about the Third Order, and he knew, because he was from France, before coming to Toronto, he knew the Capuchins, who were traditional and were ordained by the bishops of the society. He knew them, and the Father Guardian, Antoine, who is the head of the Capuchins in Morvan, in France, was giving the retreat there before the general chapter. So Father Mary was kind enough to talk to him, and when he came back, he was delegated the power to receive me into the order, thank God, and I made my novitiate. And shortly after that, I was given a bunch of brothers and sisters. So we're now 16. And these poor people, upon elections, we have to, like a religious order, we have to make elections. They had voted me in as their minister prefect.
I see. So that's basically how you began from the ground up. From basic permission, and then it developed within your own parish or out of your own parish?
That's right.
I see. And what does it mean exactly, maybe for clarification, to be Third Order Secular?
Well, St. Francis founded three orders. The first order was for the priests and brothers who would take the vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. The second is the four clares. I'm sure that you've heard of them.
Yes.
And the third was for those who did not have a religious vocation, but who were in the world, but still wanted to serve God. St. Francis, in the early 1200s, was making quite a stir in Italy. And in Tuscany, there were people flocking around him. And there were two people. One of them was Blessed Lucrezio and his wife, Bonadonna. They had approached him, and they wanted to serve God. Now, there were people who wanted to leave the married state and enter into the First Order, but they didn't have the vocation for that. St. Francis saw that. And so he made this rule of the Third Order, where those could serve God in their own homes and still be united to his order. He founded the First Third Order, and it was... I believe there was other third orders before that, but nothing like this, where the person would serve God in the spirit of the vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience in their own homes without having to leave the married state. This is exactly what we do. This is exactly what the third order is. It is the religious life in the world, in our families, in our homes. I mean, it's not only for people who have families. The single person could have a vocation to the third order. The secular priest, a cardinal, a bishop, anyone who's not already a religious could enter into the third order. And this is the origin. And the first two tertiaries were married. So, and they were very holy, and the kids, it was a blessed.
I see. So he, in essence, he allowed you a form of an instrument towards sanctity, even though you remained in the secular world.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what it is. It's an instrument for those who are still living in the world to practice virtue and hence union with God and ultimately sanctity and hopefully heaven.
I see. So, and this is absolutely a blessing for those who cannot enter the religious life or the secular religious orders but would like to have the graces therein.
Exactly.
Right. And
exactly.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
These souls who are in the third order are united with all the first and second order and third order who have departed, who are in heaven, and those who are in purgatory. So there's huge graces which come down upon entering the order, you know, just through the union with these saints, great saints. I mean, how many Franciscan saints are there? Just in the third order alone, St. Pius X, the Curia of Ars, Pius the 12th, all the popes from, I believe it was Pius the 9th to Pius the 12th, were all Third Order Franciscans. Archbishop Lefebvre's mother, very holy lady, a Third Order Franciscan. The parents of Saint Therese of Lisieux, Christopher Columbus, Dante. There's an army of souls just in the Third Order, you know, and they became holy by living the gospel, you know, which is essentially what the rule does, is it kind of aligns one's life, you know, along the path of the Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ.
And would you say, brother, because your description is beautiful, to those listening and to those perhaps questioning what you're doing, is this realistic in the world in which we live today, the world of materialism and secularism? Could you explain how you see this as a realistic approach to holiness?
Sure. One beautiful thing and a consolation for us in this age is that God does not change. Okay, we know that. And the graces of an order like this are available even today, and especially today, because we know where sin abounds, grace abounds, just even more, St. Paul says. So for souls who are in this mess, like, you know, we have the disaster in the church, okay? We have the Novus Ordo Mass. We have, you know, all the attack of the devil on the priesthood and the Holy Sacraments. What more can we ask for as lay people? Well, you know, we've been given the grace of tradition, okay, for us, but also to be united with these saints in heaven and to have this order, to have this means of sanctity. If not now, then when do we need it? You know, especially today we need it. And souls are hungry and thirsty to become holy, because that's what they're created for. Their hearts are yearning for the infinite. Okay? Every heart is made for greatness, heroism. And the devil wants everyone to feel mediocre and to act mediocre and to live their lives in drudgery, you know. And this is a means of really taking advantage of the graces available to live the gospel. And that's what every person on the face of this earth is called to do. And the gospel is not just for bishops and priests. It's not just for those who are in the cloister. The gospel is for everyone. You know, everyone has to renounce himself. Anyone who wants to go to heaven has to carry their cross, to deny themselves. You know, and we as human beings, God knows we're weak, we're fickle, you know, we have a tendency not to persevere. So this, the rule, keeps us on the straight and narrow, you know, and the graces that are available for those who enter the order, it's there for them to become saints.
And I
and
see
in what
you,
age do we need saints?
Especially now.
Exactly.
And I could see that you feel personally strengthened by the choice you've made.
Indeed. I feel absolutely honored to be a part of an order like this. To be able to live a rule of life that has made hundreds of saints. Who can possibly be worthy of that? You know, we have communists who are striving, you know, to push their ideals out there. Okay? And they give their lives for that. For what? You know, where does that lead? And us who are in the world, who are Catholics, you know, what should we be striving for? With all our hearts, we should strive to serve God, because we're going to end up there anyway. Either we're going to end up with God or you know, God forbid, with the devil. So, I think it's crazy not to take advantage of. Obviously, it may not be for everyone, the Third Order of St. Francis, but certainly sanctity is for everyone. And the obligations of the rule are not so difficult that someone very young could manage. I mean, 15 years old you have to be to enter to be professed.
But, I see. So it's available for those of reasonable age who wish to become part of the fraternity.
Indeed. Yeah.
Now, and Brother, you mentioned rules. And I'd like to ask a question about the rules. I'm sure our listeners are saying, well, what are their rules? And Brother Pio, in essence, you follow the rules of Popes Leo XIII and Nicholas IV. Am I correct?
Very correct.
Could you explain the differences that exist or compare and contrast between the two rules?
I will give you, the rules are long. They're documents, the popes have issued them. I can give you a little bit of I can give you kind of a feel of what we're dealing with.
That would be wonderful.
Yes, Nicholas IV, his rule came out. It was the rule which was put into legal language, and it's very close. It's almost identical to the primitive rule which St. Francis with the Pope had first given to the first tertiaries. Now, Leo XIII came in the 1800s, and he mitigated the rule to a large extent as far as austerities and penances. He wanted to open up the Third Order to more souls so that he could use it as a leaven of society. You know, for the more holy Catholics we have out there, the better it was. He had said that his idea for a social reform was the Third Order of St. Francis. And so he's opening up the doors, and he provided the opportunity for souls to enter, those who could not do, you know, the penances of the old rule. I'll give you just an example. Nicholas the Fourth rule, which thanks be to God, some of the tertiaries in our fraternity have taken up. It's the old rule, Nicholas the Fourth, traditional rule. They were asked, for example, to abstain from meat Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. They were permitted only two meals a day. They fasted every Friday. They were asked to pray before and after all meals. And there was two Lents. They had to fast every day of Advent and Lent. And from November the 1st to Christmas, And from Quinquagesima Sunday to Easter, they were to fast. And they were to pray the whole breviary, or Paternosters with the Glorias. So you see there that there's a quite a bit of corporal penance there, right?
Quite demanding.
Yes. Now, this is just a part of the rule, you understand. There's many other points.
Yes.
I'm just kind of trying to give you a feel of the corporal things involved, corporal penances. With Leo the 13th, he asked that souls would assist in Mass, if possible, every day, recite devoutly the office of 12 Our Fathers, Hail Marys and Glory Bees, except when they're prevented by sickness. They're to also recite grace before and after meals and to make an examination of conscience every night, confession and communion each month. And their fast days were two, the vigils of the Immaculate Conception and of St. Francis, the Feast of St. Francis. So, along with the Old Lent, which is 40 days. So you see, there's a big difference there as far as corporal penance. But that, in my opinion, any Catholic could do, you know, Leo XIII's rule. It's very possible. And that's all that the Church asks. That's all that's of obligation. In my opinion, I think that Nicholas the IV's rule might be a little bit closer to what our Holy Father Francis, who, you know, his spirit, it was one of penance. For those who could take it up, in my opinion, I think it's good, with the advice of a confessor, obviously. I think the penance now is needed more than, you know, maybe some of the other times in the Church. The Mother of God has come to tell us in every one of her true apparitions, penance, prayer. I mean, the Mother of God doesn't, she doesn't come down to earth because she's bored up there in heaven. I mean, you know, I think it's necessary. Yeah. But again, these things, these are like the bones of the rule. They are absolutely nothing without love.
I see. For those who have just joined us, today we're speaking with Brother Pio Francis, Minister Prefect for the Third Order Secular of St. Francis in Toronto, Canada. Brother, you explained very clearly what Pope Leo the 13th did, and I'd like to just move a step beyond if I can. Now, I believe Pope Paul the 6th changed these rules of the secular Franciscans right after Vatican II. Could you explain now what the Third Order Secular would consist of today in the New Order?
I can tell you that after Vatican II, the Third Order of St. Francis suffered a revolution. There was an absolute revolution. They changed the name. It's now the Secular Franciscan Order. In the 70s, Paul the 6th approved this new order, this new, I should say, rule. And in the beginning, they kept the constitutions of Pius the 12th, but then slowly that's gone, and now we have the new Secular Franciscan Order, the new rule, the new constitutions, and it fits in just perfectly with Vatican II's new spirit, conciliar spirit, and it's right along the lines of Vatican II and the new Church. It's absolutely tragic what they've done. Father Villerbon, when this came out, he wrote on it, and I have paraphrased some of the quotations that he gave to his Franciscans in France, and he warned of this new rule, this new SFO, this new creation. He said that the new rule is a mix of modernism and progressivism, and it's a provider of communism. He said that this rule leads to communism, and communism is at the heart of the rule. He said that the new rule pushes exterior artificial activism and forbids the soul to receive supernatural graces. So, you see, you know, the Third Order's been completely changed. They have the legal structure, but this order, those who are following this rule, if they stick to this rule, you know, and they forget about everything in the past, they're leaving the order. They're leaving the order.
Right?
This is a man-centered, like, it's unbelievable that something like this can happen from the top to the bottom. This is a secular order in the church. It's an ecclesiastical association of the laity, and Vatican II and its spirit, it seeps even into this. It's really astounding. If you read it, I can quote certain things just to give your listeners a taste of what the SFO is about now, if you like.
Sure, absolutely.
Let me give you something from, and you can keep in mind man, human dignity. Keep in mind the focus on man when you hear these things, because they don't, you know, it doesn't come out and abolish Catholic language. It doesn't abolish, you know, that would be, it would be obvious.
Yes.
The
yes.
religious language is there, Franciscan language is there, but in essence, it's void of Franciscanism. It's a desacralization of the Third Order of St. Francis. That's what Father Villebon said. It's an orientation that is not Franciscan. Listen to this. This is from their rule. Mindful that they are bearers of peace, which must be built up unceasingly, they should seek out ways of unity and fraternal harmony through dialogue. With him they can accept that they're talking, you see, they're speaking of God. With him they can accept the will of the Father, even under the most difficult circumstances, and live the Franciscan spirit of peace, rejecting every doctrine contrary to human dignity. Here's another. Traditional among Franciscan penitents, imagine, you know, this is a rule of the church. This is the brothers and sisters of penance is what the third order is called, okay?
Yes.
And this is the recommendation for penance. Traditional among Franciscan penitents, penitential practices such as fasting and abstinence should be known, appreciated, and lived out according to the general guidelines of the church. Well, right. Vatican II, you know, how many days of penance do we have
right.
now, Mr. Bernard?
But that's not a rule of order.
Oh,
that's just
that
a general. That's a suggestion. Yes.
Yes.
That's a suggestion.
Yes.
It sounds. You and I discussed earlier. Very Kantian. You know, man, moral man, makes his own law, his own universe. And
exactly.
Here,
man-centered.
Very man-centered. So the SFO is then man-centered with some Catholic language.
Exactly.
Thrown in there.
Unfortunately. And I mean, there's no doubt that there are good souls in there, and I have spoken with them, you know, and they're cut to the heart, because they know some, there's people in there who know something's wrong, and many are leaving, and my heart goes out to them, because, you know, it's almost as if they've kind of been hoodwinked, you know. I mean, you're just trying to do, you're trying to go along, you know, you're trying to be, you know, in union with the church, and you trust the authorities in the church, and you just want to do what's right. You want to be a Franciscan. And I mean, look what's been taken from them.
Yes.
This huge instrument of grace and sanctity. And it's been absolutely sucked of all the marrow, you know, everything that a soul needs, penance, prayer. I mean, it's suggested. You know, there's no. It's not even asked of them to promise to observe the commandments of God and precepts of the Church.
It I see it almost. It equates to the diminishing of the role of the priest in the Church since Vatican II.
Exactly.
Not a priest, a presider. I'm using Vatican II language. It seems to equate right along there. And it's just another diminishing of what should be a rule of order and what was always part of the traditional Catholic Church.
Yes.
So that's, it's obviously something, well, we don't grow under these conditions. The Church is seeing that in the seminaries, and it's going to see that in the secular order.
Exactly.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Now let me ask you this, Brother Pio. Bishop Tessier de Malvaez, in 2006, had spoken openly against the ideas that came out of Vatican II. And what was his basic criticism?
Well, in 2006, he did an interview with Stephen Heiner, and the Remnant did publish this. If people want to read it, I would definitely suggest it's a very... For me, it was a great light to see what was behind it, because you always wonder, what is it, you know, what's behind this new church, like the idea, you know. And if they want to see it, it's truerestoration.blogspot.com. They can find it. It's the interview with Bishop Tissé de Malarez. And in there, the bishop tells us that the philosophy that is behind Vatican II is the philosophy of Immanuel Kant, a German philosopher. Now, the bishop there tells us that this, you know, we hear of the hermeneutic of continuity, you know, the interpretation,
yes,
the movement, the continual flux, known as the living tradition. Okay, and in this interview, it clearly states that the interviewer, Stephen Einhorn, says this hermeneutic, it is interpreting existing doctrines in new lights. And His Eminence says, His Excellency says, yes, exactly, according to the new philosophy, the idealist philosophy of Kant, and that is the philosophy of the living tradition.
Yes.
So, he goes on to conclude that Vatican II cannot be read as a Catholic work. It cannot be read as a Catholic work because the philosophy behind it is a mine in Kant that adds off the wall.
Well, Kant was clearly, as an 18th century philosopher, I think he died at the beginning of the 1800s, he was a religious liberal, and he was very pro-enlightenment. And obviously, the idea of moral man and the internal man and creating your own law and own universe, this is reflected in many of the post-conciliar interpretations that came out of Vatican II.
Exactly. And truth, we know that truth is a conformity of our mind to reality.
Yes.
Now, if everything is made subjective, then what are you left with? You're left with yourself.
That's right.
You know?
And more subjectivity.
If everything comes from within, right. Oh, we have big problems. I mean, and this philosophy leads to, this is a messed up philosophy which is, you know, completely severed from reality, and it leads to a theology, you know, that's messed up in modernism. And how does a modern mind reach out to those outside of the church? And there you have ecumenism, you see? So this is a great light to see this bishop, you know, and bishop, and I've heard Bishop Williamson as well, speaking of Hegel, you know, another German philosopher.
Yes.
You know, the thesis, antithesis put together to make the synthesis. You know, in the church we have progressivists, and then they need the traditionalists, you know, on the other side to build this new church. Now, where they're going, I have no idea. But for us, as traditional Catholics, you know, if we're told, you know, oh, you must dance, you know, you must march to the drum of Hegel, or, you know, you must dance to the flute of Kant, we say, no, where are they going? You know, if a man is driving down the street and you see him driving back and forth, and you say, dear sir, where are you going? And he says, I don't know, happily. You know, are you going to get into the car with him? No.
There has to be some direction.
Of course, the church is true. Its truth, with its dogmas, it's solid. Is on solid rock. Is absolutely objective. You know, Christ is not, definitely not in movement. I mean, can you imagine if God changed? I mean, could you trust a God who changed every year? You know.
You would think that the subjectivist would say, ask this question, if this is what is true today, what will be true 30 years from now?
Exactly.
And they don't ask themselves.
Archbishop Lefebvre said to Cardinal Ratzinger, well, we'll wait, you know. We'll stick with tradition and wait.
And see what happens.
Yeah, we'll wait. We'll stay with, 2,000 years of tradition.
Well, that's exactly what we're trying to do, and I think in having this program today, you've introduced a whole new dimension to the graces that are available to us for the salvation, as many of the society priests and most priests who know what's going on, say, the purpose is salvation of souls.
That's
the bottom line.
Very, Exactly. And we should be so thankful for these wonderful priests. Without these priests, there would be no Third Order of St. Francis. You know, Mr. Bagnoli, it's such a grace to be able to have the true Mass and the sacraments, you know, as they have been always. And if you would allow me, I would like to say that every time we go to Mass, there we have the fountain of all the graces we need to become saints, you know. And if we didn't have the priests, and devil knows this, and we didn't have those graces, we're finished. But at every single Mass, there's a well there of infinite treasure that we can all go and take, you know, and according to our dispositions and according to our generosity, you know, we'll take more or less.
Absolutely.
And this is what is fantastic, in my opinion, about St. Francis of Assisi. It's not just the fact that St. Francis of Assisi was, you know, a very lovely man who did a lot of penance and, you know, the pedestal of the saint, all the works that he did, you know. But it's his love of God, which he received through the sacraments, through the Holy Mass of all time. The love that he had for our Lord is what drove him to do all those things, all the penances, all the miracles. You know, and the more generous he was, the more God gave him. You know, and that was St. Francis' martyrdom. Because the more he gave, the more God gave. You know, and God was giving a hundredfold more. And he could not return that love. He could never outdo God in generosity. You know, and we have there a great example, I think, in our time, especially as traditional Catholics. You know, we can imitate, you know, we might not have the pedestal, which is, who cares, you know, we can't raise the dead, or we can't drive out a legion of devils. But we have there an immense source of sanctification, and we have St. Francis who can intercede for us. And the example is there that every single person, if they have an ounce of breath in them, they can become saints. And that's what God wants. He wants saints. Now, we put the limits on God, not God on us. I think we forget that. You know, we can go to Mass and kneel down and be so disposed as to receive the grace we need to become saints.
Well, I think we have to just, you know, we have to pray to St. Francis for our priests and for our church.
I think so as well.
And I would just the way you so beautifully demonstrate what is and what we can get from the graces of all of this is just beautiful. And unfortunately, Brother Pio, I think our time limitation is upon us. But I'd just like to thank you for your contribution to the voice of Catholic tradition. But this morning, Brother Pio, I think you've clearly demonstrated how the Third Order Secular of St. Francis provides an instrument of sanctity. And considering the world in which we live today, we here at the voice of Catholic tradition, and I'm sure our listeners, we would like to thank you so much for that. And I'd like to say that we will get together again. We will have another program. There's so much more to do.
Oh, thank you. It's been a blessing.
It's been a blessing. May God bless you, Brother Pio. Until the next time.
And you too.
Bye now.
This has been the voice of Catholic tradition on Long Island. Host Joe Bagnoli interviewed Brother Pio Francis from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. He is the minister prefect of the Third Order Secular of St. Francis in that area. We thank you for listening to the voice of Catholic tradition. This program is heard each week from 7:30 until 8 on this station. We invite you to visit our website at www.voiceofcatholicradio.com. The program is sponsored by Alan E. Fricke Memorials Incorporated of Ronkonkoma and Medford, telephone 696-0721. You can attend the Tridentine Latin Mass in this area at the Church of St. Michael the Archangel, 900 Horseblock Road in Farmingville, Sunday Low Mass at 7, High Mass at 9. Many Sundays there's a Mass at 11:30, with frequent weekday Masses as well. Please pray for the consecration of Russia by name by the Pope and all the bishops of the world at the same time on the same day as requested by Our Lady, yet to be done in that manner. Please pray the daily rosary. Our Lady of Fatima, pray for us. On behalf of the Voice of Catholic Tradition, this is Tom Luciani thanking you for listening and inviting you to be with us again next Sunday morning at 7:30. Have a wonderful week. God bless you all. Tenete traditionis.